And welcome to The Age Stage. I'm Vicky Barber, and with me is my partner in crime, Brody Grisey. How are you, Brody?
Look, I'm fit as an aged Mallee Bull.
I don't think I've heard that one before, yes, Brody.
Aged Mallee Bull.
Aged like a good red wine, though.
Yes, there's a bull story. I won't go into that.
It's no, maybe
a little bit
not.
Naughty. How was your week?
My week's been great, thank you.
Yep.
It's been wonderful.
What's been happening?
I actually went to my 30-year high school reunion on the weekend.
Oh, right, that's right. I remember you telling me about
that. Yes, it was wonderful.
Was it?
Yes, it was wonderful. I boogied my boogie out.
Yes.
I do like a good boogie.
De-boogied yourself.
I did, but I realised my knees don't handle it quite as well as they used to.
Did you take partners or was it all?
No.
Okay, so it was all, so everyone really made it.
Everyone made the most of it. I mean, some people did take their partners, which is fine. But
they'd all changed, of course.
Look, I think most of the women we've come out great.
Right.
But it's amazing when you've last seen a young guy with a full head of hair and then you're trying to picture who he is again without any hair. It was quite different, but it was a lot of fun.
Did any fess up to having a big crush on you?
No.
Really? No. You surprised me. I would have thought.
No.
Do you remember me? My name's Bazza. I thought you were really cute and I didn't have any courage to come
had none of that.
Always wanted to sit where you sat on this.
But it was great catching up with them anyway. And some warm weather. I was in Queensland, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was very warm weather.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's lovely, lovely.
Yeah, we've got a bit coming, haven't we? So
we've got a lot happening today. We've got Peter and Stuart back talking about retirement living and planning for the future.
Yep.
We have Sam in talking about...
Yeah, she's going to cover off because the thing that we lost.
Oh, okay.
So she's covering back the monumental side of burial and what all that means and where you can and cannot be married and how
and all the
laws are changing for that. Yep.
Yes. And then we have Andrea back with us, our legal eagle.
Yes, indeed.
Aspects. But I just also wanted to mention that here on the Mornington Peninsula, the Mornington Peninsula Shire is having the Positive Ageing Community Summit on Thursday, the 24th of November, and that's being held at the Safety Beach Community Centre. So they're inviting people to participate in the Positive Ageing Strategy, and they're a community for all ages philosophy. So to consider new and emerging issues, they're inviting people to actually book. There's lunch provided. It's from 10 till 2. So if people are interested in attending that, if they can contact the Mornington Peninsula Shire on 59501617 if they'd like to attend.
Just ask the lads what they think the Shire is doing, because I think the Shire is actually quite
focused.
Well, it's moving, you know.
Yeah,
it's moving in the right direction.
Well,
we're seeing a lot of stuff happening in that.
Which is great to see.
Yeah, it is.
Great to see. Well, there's an ageing population on the peninsula that we need to be accommodating for.
Well, I suppose we better play in the walk-in music so that we can hide all the crashing and banging of doors and coughing and sputtering while they take their places.
That's right.
And if you're going to try with any of the friends, you're the two best friends we could possibly want to talk to.
Welcome back, Stuart and Peter.
Hi, Vicky. Hi, Brody.
Peter's
Hi, Peter.
Holiday is now a thing of complete and absolute past.
But I must say, I think he's kept his tan.
Yeah, it is. It's a distant memory.
And you, and as it just quietly drifts off into the vapour, and just as it... The credit bills are right. Oh,
no,
what?
I'm planning next year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're planning already? You've got to be a planner.
Yesterday.
Oh, well
you
done.
You're having
like
a lend.
Like your star.
You are having a lend, surely. You
having
can't. This isn't fair. This is actually presenter flagellation.
It's a tough gig, I tell you, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but someone's got to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, welcome
Six
back.
Weeks again?
Five.
Cutting down.
Cutting it short.
It's the size of the economy now. It's contracting.
Well, we don't know. You know, this time next year, might not be there.
Exactly.
We'll have to see what Mr. Trump
has to do. That's a segue for planning, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Yeah,
we
wanted to talk about what's the future of retirement living, independent living, what's happening and what changes or aspects to be thought of and planned.
Because we've had the conversation that so many of the aged stay in their own places, and retirement villages have appeared in the last 10 or so years, or over 40 years. But, you know, it's sort of starting to gather momentum. So where is it going? Is it going
where
to
are
be
we
this
end up?
Huge emergence? Is it going to be people catching up? Is it going to be, and this is the thing that worries me actually, is that the kids are going to say, I think you really need to go to a retirement village. And it's not because there's anything wrong with you or there's anything that, you know, you can't manage on your own, but it saves them worrying. And I think that that bit of pressure could end up start applying, particularly to the baby boomers, of which I'm one. So what do you think?
Stuart.
Stuart, what do you think?
There was a quick throw.
It was very profound.
I think we're going to follow the same trend that's happening in the general population, with apartments being built in more suburbs.
Okay.
Whilst land density becomes scarcer, the quarter acre blocks are being subdivided with, certainly around my area, generally two dwellings put on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly applications being made for more medium density rise. And I think the City of Melbourne's identified that through their green wedge and their developments to just try and put more people in a similar space. And there's good reasons for that, because that's where all your services are, that's where all your infrastructure is, and we stop pushing people further and further out of the cities. And I think retirement villages will follow a similar model.
Yeah, there's really two issues there, Ooh. Isn't there, Stuart? There's the issue of those of us who have been around for a while and have existing villages relatively low density, and that stock is getting old.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the new development trying to find sites, and they're hard to find. Certainly greenfield sites are very hard to find. So much higher density apartment living, but that's happening.
But you're suggesting that there's going to be 10, 20, 30 floor apartment blocks that are going to be retirement enclaves, is that?
Already exists.
But, right, yeah. Where?
But in a variety of fashions.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been of a view, and we've tried to preach the mantra over here, particularly in Southeast Asia, that you guys keep on building your high-rise buildings, not a problem, you're property developers, but consider giving a number of floors over to aged care-specific purposes. So retired, so build a slightly smaller unit for those things and provide some additional services. And so we've tried to convince developers over the last 20 years, in particularly in Southeast Asia, that that's a good model to follow. If you go to the US, there's plenty of illustrations about high-rise buildings and really good quality places that are generally retirement specific. But having just come back from the US from a conference, there's a broader realisation now that all we need to provide accommodation for all generations.
So you're saying it's a mixed, it may be a high rise, but it's a mix, like what you would see in your normal neighbourhood, but condensed on into a vertical.
Mixed use.
Rather, unlike a hotel for the infirm.
Correct, correct. But you would still facilitate ageing in place in such an environment.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it is simply home. What we provide is home.
Yes, it intrigues me, though, is that I can understand. I think it's very clever if you are migrating potentially from apartment dwelling into apartment village. That makes sense, because apartments themselves are not historically well known for being friendly places. You know, they tend not to be. People don't talk in the lifts and things. You know, it's just the way it's always been. So to migrate into that from your quarter-acre block and lose the fresh air and the ability to go and tinker in your little garden or whatever else it may be.
I mean, in our situation at the village, we're trying to plan for certainly the next 10 years, and we believe that apartments will form part of that model, so we will still keep our broad acreage, and we'll still keep independent units,
right.
But we will have apartments to complement that. And these will be the same size as an independent unit. So, you know, they are 100 square metre apartments, and we do 100 square metre units at this stage. And they will simply provide an alternative to people who may not want to live on a broad acreage, but have a more community-like environment.
So would they be located where you are now?
Yes.
Well,
our village is old enough to be going through that whole regeneration cycle.
Oh, right, yes.
And, you know, it's been there for 40 years and needs to be modernised to be relevant for mm-hmm. future. And over the last 10 years, we've probably rebuilt 200 units on our site. And this will be the next iteration of that, where we have plans before our board to say that we should be building at least 50 apartments, hopefully next year, with Frankston Council. If you are listening to this, application to be lodged shortly.
And how high is this going to be?
We'll stick to two-storey.
Oh, okay. So it's only a townhouse looking.
Mm. Yeah, we did consider three-storey, but which we could do within the city of Frankston, because it's changed from stories to actual building height,
isn't it?
But it will make the ceiling levels just too low for our comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So we will stick with two-storey and go down that particular track. It's just part of urban modernisation.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I know that with my parents in England, that was a very interesting piece of architecture, because they're very finicky in the country, they say, you know, you've got, and huge grounds, and yet the biggest part of the village life was what looked like two-story stables. So you had flats downstairs and flats upstairs. It was only two-story. Mm. But it looked like the manor houses' stables, effectively. And it just sat in the land beautifully. But they had, they must have had 50 acres around them. And don't ask me why. They're never going to be allowed to build on it. But on the other hand, architecturally, it was very empathetic with the space
and the
culture of the, in this case, the Cotswolds.
So we'd like to try and do a terrace style of development.
Yeah, I think
so. So it looks like that traditional terrace housing.
Lovely. Yes.
And we think that there will be demand for that.
I think we're also gazing at the horizon at the Village Glen. One of the issues for all older villages is there's no doubt the market is requiring larger units.
Yep.
And we, like Village Baxter, our first group of units were under the old, about 9 squares, under the old measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And over the journey, we've had 5 stages, and now we're building sort of 16-square units because that's what the market seems to think they want. Now, the issue for us and for a lot of villages is when it comes time to redevelop those older units, the whole village is built around a body corporate fee, like the service fee, and it's so many units go up to make the budget. And then if you redevelop a section of the village of, say, 100 units into 50 units, clearly it's going to be more expensive for everybody to live there. Major issue for us, major issue. But I think we can get over those issues. But I think more importantly with design, I was talking to a Lend Lease conference a little while ago about apartment living and design. Apartments in the city, as you know, they're 30 and 40 floors.
Yep.
And there's lift wells and corridors, maybe on the ground floor a cafe, etc. But apart from that, not too many community facilities.
Mm.
Whereas in a village, I think it's going to take a lot of smart architectural design where people don't have that syndrome of there's a corridor and you close your door and that's the end of the world.
Mm.
We're going to have much smarter designs of corridors. And in these buildings that are, if you like, village orientated, lots of gathering places for.
Of course, you need your meeting spaces, where you catch up
lounges
and have your
little
coffee
places,
or your
intimate places where you can catch up. Because what a village is all about, as we've talked ad nauseum, I suppose, in this show, is community and socialisation. Now, apartment buildings aren't that in the city.
Not traditionally,
For the young people that they live a fairly nocturnal life and they come and go. And they're very happy to shut themselves in their apartment when they get home from work at 6, 7 at night. And then, but in a village environment, that's not how they live.
No.
So
there's... I think it's interesting. Because
intelligent design.
Yeah, it will ultimately come down to that. Mm. And how you... There's got to be a way of bringing the outside in somehow.
Yeah.
Because I think to be... Unless you've been inoculated with apartment living already, so that you know what to expect and you know that it can be and often is hermetically sealed to keep it at the right temperature and to keep all the sound out or whatever.
And you'll be very lonely in an apartment.
And you can be very, very lonely in an apartment. That's absolutely true.
And so we're against loneliness, aren't we?
We are. So certainly if you look at the broad spectrum of villages, I mean, we're villages of similar sizes, Our view is over the next maybe 30 years that will be a mix. 50% of a village will be apartments and 50% will be traditional dwellings.
Right.
But that's a gradual process. So you wouldn't rush in and build that tomorrow, but you would certainly plan for higher density in various areas.
Mm.
And they can serve the same purpose as independent units. If you were doing 6, 7, 8 storey, then you would certainly want to have a variety of space within the apartment complex to create the art studios and
yes.
the gathering spots
yes.
and the restaurant and all of those sorts of things.
And going back to your issue about space, how you've gone from 9 and grown,
yes.
the interesting thing with apartments in places like New York is that you've now got people that are taking an apartment and then half of the apartment above and putting a staircase in, and the next door flat is taking the other half, so that they're either taking two apartments and making them into one.
Mm.
I've actually stayed in a New York apartment where there were 3 apartments that have been made into one, and so the thinking about the floor plan is not as necessarily as rigid as it from architecture. But I think you're absolutely on the money in terms of the way that the architects think, and also understand really understand the space that you deal with, and that takes a special vision and a special understanding by the architect, doesn't it?
Definitely.
What's your parents' apartment like?
My in-laws. Well, it was interesting.
Oh, in-laws, sorry.
That's okay. That it was interesting working with them in regards to the design of it, because architecturally it was beautiful, but was it truly functional for people of their age group? And there were suggestions and changes that had to be made, because we realised, looking at it on paper, it wasn't really what someone of their age group needed. So I think that when you say the designer or the architect really needs to be aware of what that market really needs from a functional perspective.
There's
as well.
Like being there, walking through it,
mm-hmm.
see what works, live the experience.
Yes.
And then you know whether it's going to be suitable or not.
Mm. That's exactly
that's
right.
It's all part of our process.
Well, I must admit that's why I've always said to my kids, if you want to study anything, study architecture. You may never build anything in your life, but you'll understand an awful lot about an awful lot of things, because it teaches you to think. Mm. And, you can get 2 architects, and one of which can design great things, which are a complete nonsense when it actually comes to practicality. Mm. They don't know how many PowerPoints to put in, and they don't understand that maybe you need to have a kitchen that you can literally take out the bottom 9 inches so that it can all drop down and you can work from wheelchair and all that. Instinctively, they don't have to be told. Anyway.
Well, I think apartments, not apartments, but architects, a prerequisite should be they should have a very highly developed sense of emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Yes, I'm absolutely right.
Mm. Are you suggesting yours doesn't?
Ooh.
just on that note.
Well, I wasn't suggesting that, but
there's an opportunity to give a plug there.
Now, while I think about it, we have a question that I brought up last week.
You did.
With a question without notice. So I'll just repeat it. Have you had a think about it?
We have.
Great. The question was, hi, age team. I have a mother who is expected to pass away soon, and she lives in a retirement village which has a palliative care facility. When she does pass on, what happens in terms of her bond? Do they deal with a solicitor, my brother who is executive but lives in Queensland, or me, and what happens? And how long do you think before they have to empty her room? Signed, S. Mitchum, P.S. And her name is Mary, so we can refer to her as Mary.
Yeah.
And that's actually quite a complicated issue, but let's simplify it down. I'm assuming from what she said, she's in a village, they've got care, she's given up her village life,
yep.
and is in her care space, which is a room, and now she's getting palliative care in that room.
Can I interview Stuart and tease out the answer to that question?
Absolutely.
Oh. Firstly, Stuart, the question's complicated because she's talking about a retirement village, been talking about bonds. So there's a bit of confusion, I think, in terms here. Let's assume, shall we, that she's living in a residential aged care facility.
I think we have to make that presumption.
Yep, yep,
that
yep,
she's
yep.
not living in a unit. So
no.
for money, from
she's not living independently, she's in care.
Yes.
And she's paid a bond and she's now in their palliative unit or in a room being attended to in the palliative sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's about to pass. So, Stuart, the RAD, what's the rules on a RAD? Or the bond, shall we call it?
The rules at time of departure. A couple of things can happen at that stage. In our situation, the day that the person passes away, we will refund the money to the executor of the estate.
Okay, yeah. May I interrupt? What about probate?
That's why we pay to the executor, who will then deal with probate.
Yes.
But that's us. The village can hold the money until probate has been given, which will involve a lawyer, usually a lawyer, contacting the village when the grant of probate has been issued by the statutory authorities in there. So it can vary. We choose not to go down that track because we think it's simplest. Mm. You know, there's no point. I mean, paying to an estate.
We go one step further. We pay it to the lawyer acting for the estate to put in their trust account, because sometimes executors are under a lot of pressure from family members.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And in some families, it isn't all good.
No.
So you really need an independent party, which we think is the lawyer, and then he can get probate.
Yeah,
so,
we leave it to the power of it. You know, whoever is the executor of your estate can then handle the money.
So deal with lawyers. Okay, so let's... Yeah.
So that's the
but
first part.
But it's done quite immediately.
The Act says, Act says, doesn't it, Stuart, that from the date of death, basically, within 14 days, you have to pay them out.
Right.
14
okay,
days.
So.
Unless there's probate is an issue, and if probate is an issue... From the date of death, it's legislated that the amount of the bond or the RAD can earn interest at a prescribed Commonwealth government rate. So, as you know, when you go into residential care, you pay a bond and you lose the use of the money for the journey of the stay, and the owner of the village can invest that money and they can get the interest. The minute you die, the reverse happens. They still keep the money, but they've got to pay, when they do pay you, either in the 14 days or... at the end of probate, it will be that plus whatever interest it's earned from the day.
Is that 14 days from when they cite the death certificate?
Yes.
Yes, right.
Yeah, generally.
But generally that's pretty quick.
All right, so I think that answers that for Sarah. One last issue, though.
Last one was about moving out the furniture.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Would they have a week or 10 days or fortnight? Or
This will sound cold-blooded, and it's not intended to be that way. There's really three issues at stake. One, you're living in a small dwelling in a nursing home, so your bed is generally not your own.
Yep.
So your actual furnishings in there are fairly minimal.
It's going to be a TV and a chair, really, isn't it?
Yes.
And
your clothes.
And then your personal items.
That's issue number one. Issue number two is that for every vacancy that occurs in a nursing home or an aged care facility, there is someone waiting, equally desperate to secure that facility, because they have a loved one in similar circumstances. And the third, from our experience, and I think it's fairly well researched, it is far better for a family to clear out a unit then and there, so in the immediacy, which just solves one issue so they can then grieve and carry on with their lives in a peaceful environment without the need to come back in a week or two later and then clear out the remaining unit.
So you're saying that within 24 hours?
But within the first day, the first 2 days would
couple
be
of
the
days.
Normal. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
All right, well, that answers...
Similar. And sometimes we have... That happens to people where family could be interstate or overseas no one to assist. Yeah. So with the permission of the executor, we would on their behalf, empty the room and store
it. Yeah, yeah.
Until someone can come and relieve us.
Well,
in most places.
Because she refers to her brother being in Queensland. So that announces that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that covers it, Sarah. So if you're listening, I hope that...
I thought it was Mary.
No, Mary is the mother.
Mary's her mother.
Mary's Eve.
Okay.
Who by now...
R.I.P.
may not be here, my dear. But, you know, we have to be sensitive about this. Gentlemen,
Thank you.
Try and keep it together if you wouldn't mind.
Sorry.
No.
I do apologise.
Yes, no, that's all right. Anyway, we have to go. That's the end of this week's session. It's fantastic.
Thanks, Brady. Thanks, Vicky.
Thank you. Thanks, Peter.
Au revoir.
And that means we need to play our first piece of music.
We've got Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond.
Sweet Caroline. Is he alive or is he passed on? Is he alive?
Neil Diamond. I thought he was still with us. Okay. Yes.
No, it's just that we're losing them.
We are. Yeah. I should have chosen Leonard Cohen, shouldn't I?
Here we go.
Welcome back to The Age Stage, and we have Andrea Staunton with us.
Hi, Vicky. Hello, Brody.
Oh, Lord, I haven't played her special
no,
play
we didn't.
Music.
We didn't. I think that's
oh,
what
no,
we're
if there's no theme song, I'm not coming back.
I just get pointed at, so I know that I've got to start.
No, that was my fault. I should have. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You don't need a theme song for an entry.
No, I just really enjoy it. But I'm good here anyway.
Thanks,
You've been away.
Yes, just had a little bit of time away,
bit of an R&R,
nothing very exotic,
on holiday,
I'm afraid.
Bit of a holes?
No, I was just away at training when you last recorded. Ah. So yeah, nothing very glamorous that I can report back on, I'm afraid.
Nice training spot though.
Melbourne?
No,
I do love Melbourne. So
yeah,
yes,
it's all right. But not when you miss Frankston.
No, well, Frankston is extra special.
That's all right. That's
so,
right.
What are we talking?
So today we're talking about consumer issues. I'm quite interested in this one actually, because you're going to talk to us about, I suppose, consumer rights. Really, is what happens if we're shopping, or whether it's door-to-door sales, online, all of that sort of thing.
That's right. And consumer is one of the most common legal issues in Australia. There was some big research done a couple of years ago that found that on average, half of Australians experience a legal problem in any year.
Oh, really?
Year,
half.
And
of
consumer was right at the top of the list.
Okay.
Which makes sense. We're all buying and buying and shopping and doing things, and especially now in the lead up to Christmas, we're getting those plastic cards ready to go. So I thought it was a good chance to chat to people about the sorts of rights that you have when you're in the marketplace, whether in person or the virtual marketplace.
Oh, good. That's good. So I suppose the big one is when you're shopping, like refunds and exchanges. So you're going to...
That's right. Every now and then you see people get hot under the collar demanding a refund just because they've changed their mind.
Right.
And that's an example where we do have Australian consumer laws, and there are certain rights to refunds, but they're limited rights. So they're rights to a refund if a good is faulty and can't be repaired, if it has a major defect.
Right.
But there are some scenarios that aren't covered.
But if I just decide I don't like the colour anymore.
That's right. Or you've purchased the wrong product, or you found it cheaper somewhere else, or just changed your mind, you're not entitled to a refund automatically then, unless that was a condition of your purchase or it's a special policy of the store. And when buying it, you were told that you could refund it if you changed your mind.
Does the store then have to have a little sign up saying what their policy is so you're aware, or should it be on their receipt, or what's
the practice way to know? But there's a minimum standard, which is that where there's a major defect, you're covered by Australian consumer guarantees. So even if there's a sign saying no refunds, that's not legal. And if a good is faulty, then you are going to be entitled for it to be replaced or refunded.
Okay. Right.
So they don't need to say that because that's a minimum legal standard in any event.
Is there a time frame though?
Look, I think it's generally sort of a reasonable time. So it's
not a year later.
Yeah, a year later could be pushing the envelope a bit. And it's a good idea to keep proof of purchase as well.
Right.
So that if you can't find the receipt but have other evidence like a credit card statement or some other proof of where you purchased it from, that's useful to have as well.
Okay.
Is change of mind legal?
It's legal to change your mind, but you don't always have to get a refund for it, unless that's something that was a condition of your purchase. So if you're in a department store and they say it's our policy that you can change your mind and get a refund, then that becomes a condition of the sale and you can exercise that right.
If they don't say anything...
Then no.
Then you don't.
You don't have the right to a refund.
The Christmas horror of 7 million toys being taken back for not fit for purpose because Jimmy doesn't like them...
Yes.
Is not acceptable unless if there's nothing in the store that says we do or warns you to say that we don't, then they have every right to say, I'm afraid you can't bring that back unless it's damaged.
That's right, unless there's actually something wrong with it. So it's a good thing to just ask at the time of buying it. Mm-hmm. If you're told by the salesperson that you can change it if the recipient doesn't like it, then that becomes a condition of the sale. So you could take it back and say, I was told I could return this for this reason. And
some major retailers will sort of say, you know, we'll exchange, etc.
Many do, just as good practice and goodwill for their customers.
Yes, of course.
That's right.
Which also tends to suggest if you're doing things like buying something at a market, which doesn't necessarily have the same strength or relationship with customers, that you run a risk and you can't go back and wave it under their nose and say, Jimmy didn't like it, I'm sorry, and expect them to.
Yeah, and that's a tricky one. You always come up with some good curly ones for me, Brody, but a market would be interesting too, because the laws are a little different where you're talking about private individuals selling items to each other, whether it's the golf clubs on Gumtree, or I'm not sure with a market scenario, whether they're a business or not.
No, but if I was, if
I'm at Emu Plains Market or something, is what you mean.
It has to be a market. You have to be a business because you have to cover insurance. Yes, and all sorts of course. So you, although you may be totally independent, you still have to behave like a business.
Sure.
So one assumes that then if you're behaving like a business, that the same thing applies. So you just watch where you buy, is that, I suppose, the question.
Look, buyer beware. Caveat emptor is sort of a good motto in general. But certainly, irrespective of whether you're buying from a store, whether you're buying online, if you're buying from an Australian business, that minimum consumer guarantee does apply.
Okay, so you just mentioned online. But say I've purchased something and you didn't realise it was actually from overseas, whether that be China, America, wherever. How does that impact if you want to return?
The challenge with online shopping is that, so Australian laws apply to Australian companies, but if you're purchasing from overseas, it's going to depend on the laws of that country
as
to what kind of remedy you can get. With the qualifier that depending on which site you buy it through, whether you're buying directly from an overseas company or whether you're buying from an online marketplace like eBay, eBay itself might have its own terms and conditions about what you can do. And it does. It has policies around returning goods and is regarded as being quite reputable. So it's a case of finding out before you buy. And if you're in doubt and you're concerned that it could be a scam, there are steps that you can take about that as well. And this is probably a good time to talk about that.
Yeah. A scam, a phone call? Or
the ACCC in Australia has set up Scam Watch. And if you're seeing something that looks a bit too good to be true, it probably is, but you can phone or email Scam Watch and ask them to look into
you
it
can,
for
yes,
you.
Yes, you can so actually you can register online, because I was scammed. Well, I tried to be scammed on the phone, but I was pretty switched on because I happen to be sitting in front of my computer at the same time. And ScamWatch is great because you can actually just put all the details in, boom, straight away, and then they'll follow it up for you, or at least it's registered.
That's right. And don't feel alone in being the target of a scam. I had a look at ScamWatch's website today and found that so far in 2016, over $70 million has gone in scams, and they've received over 134,000 complaints.
Wow, because a lot of people probably don't like to admit that they've been scammed.
Yeah, I'd suggest that that's really underreported, because for exactly that reason, people don't like to admit that they've been scammed. They feel embarrassed or ashamed.
Yes.
The number one scam, romance websites.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Get to win a woman?
No. Now, I should say, Brody, in talking about scams, I'm not going to tell you how to get away with one. I'm going to tell you how to avoid being scammed.
And that's why we like Andrea coming in. She keeps you in line, Brody.
Yeah, so there are really quite a lot of scams. Some are in the form of door-to-door salespeople. You get those sort of travelling con men who offer to paint your house or restore your roof or seal your driveway, but they want cash up front.
Or solar panels, all of those sort of things.
Exactly right. Yes. They want cash up front, and then they leave without the job being finished and you discover you've only got their first name and a mobile phone that nobody answers.
Yes.
That's certainly something to watch out for. And perhaps while we're talking about door-to-door salespeople, I'll just mention that you can get do not knock stickers.
I've seen those, but where do you get them from? Do you know?
So you can contact the Consumer Action Law Centre. You can actually print one off from their website or you can send them a stamped self-addressed envelope and they'll send you out a sticker. They've also got a list of places where you can collect the stickers.
Oh, okay.
And what they do is they revoke the implied licence for a person to come to your door to sell their wares. So they're not allowed to knock.
But it still means like if Australia Post come to deliver a...
That's
parcel,
right. So it's only unsolicited people.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So Australia Post, I'm just thinking otherwise.
That's right. You
then
want
I have
those
to keep
nice
going to the post office.
To arrive.
I find a baseball bat that you just you open the door and,
here
you,
we go.
And you just hold the bat. So can I help you? And
well, we at Peninsula Community Legal Centre don't endorse the use of baseball bats.
No, I don't use it. I just carry it, you know, as if I was having a cup of tea. And it works every time. You go, oh, right. It's better than the 12-gauge shotgun.
Don't even need them. You just need to say to the person to leave or yes. to point out your sticker, and it becomes an offence if they don't leave and the company can be fined for it.
Right.
So they are quite effective. They do not knock stickers. And if you're unsure of where to look, you can just Google do not knock.
Yes.
And there's also a telephone version of that, the do not call register.
Oh, yes.
Where you can put your mobile, your landline, and
I'm
for
putting
5 years.
My hand up. I have done that.
You're then free of those pesky calls.
Oh, really?
Mm. Mm.
And if they do call you, you can tell them.
And that's what's
that you're
that line
on the
called?
List.
So that's call. Do not call.
Do not call.
Yeah, and that's a government website, and there's a phone I've number for that
heard
as well.
The phone ring again.
Yeah. But while we were talking before that about the online shopping, yeah. there's quite a lot of online scams, and it's pretty mind-blowing just how much they're ripping people off. So I mentioned the romance scams,
yep.
yes.
and that's where people are going onto dating websites and putting up fake profiles, developing a rapport with a person, asking for personal contact details, maybe phoning them, texting, sending emails, and then they start asking for money. Oh, I want to come and visit you.
Oh,
and
goodness.
I need the airfare.
Yes, you do hear those stories, don't
yeah.
you? And I always feel for people that have been
it's awful.
You know, scammed in that regard.
Awful. Yeah, and there's a bunch of, you know, get rich quick, you know, work from home and earn a
oh,
fortune.
Gosh.
And there's often just pay for the processing fee, or lotteries where they ask you to then pay the administration
well,
fee and provide bank details. And
I've got this brilliant thing I worked out this week. Have you noticed on Facebook how many homeless men win Ferraris?
Oh,
have you noticed?
I haven't noticed.
There's
that.
A lot of them.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, the Ferrari's always the same, but it's the homeless men that change.
Oh, wow.
And I've worked out how this works, so I don't have to ring them and ask. What happens is I have a perfectly good house. I sell the house, I become homeless, and I invest in a Ferrari. And so I've worked it all out. I don't need to do this anymore.
Oh, dear.
You don't, you don't need to be checking out Facebook.
Well, just be careful if you do win the lottery that you actually entered it, because lotteries are another scam where you're told you've won a lottery that you never entered. And again, just provide your bank details and pay the administration fee. You should never be paying anything if you've won a prize.
No.
And you can actually, if you want to be very vigilant, you can go to scamwatch.gov.au and you can even subscribe to be on their scam alert list, and they'll tell you all the newest scams coming around.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Well,
that's interesting.
That's either going to lead to a very unhappy, miserable Christmas or a very beneficial one. It's going to be one or the other.
I guess the main tips would be to find out your rights. And
yeah.
if you're unsure
yeah.
to ask, you can certainly contact us at Peninsula Community Legal Centre if you think you have been ripped off by a trader and want to get advice, or else Consumer Affairs Victoria operates a hotline as well where you can phone and speak to someone and check.
Do you have an FAQ on things like this at your website?
No, we would direct you to
you
perhaps the Everyday Law website
yep.
where
okay.
you can get information about a whole
specific.
Range of topics. But you can certainly get a lot of information, including the videos of Steve's Scam School from Consumer Affairs website. Or you can phone them, and I mentioned Scam Watch already, or else give us a call at Peninsula Community Legal Centre and we'll point you in the right direction.
That sounds great,
Andrea.
Fantastic.
Well,
thank you.
We will
I feel very informed, actually,
always.
Going into the Christmas period. And
intellectually inspired whenever you come into our space.
Well, thank you very much.
I go away refreshed with something new.
That's always good, isn't it, Brody?
It is for me. Now, we have to say goodbye and we have to do another piece of music.
Oh, we do have another piece of music.
Yes.
We've got What's New, Pussycat? Tom Jones.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Keep your underpants on, girls.
And you're still with The Age Stage with Brody and Vicky. And we have Sam Dickerson back from Inspired Funeral Planning.
Nice to be back.
Thanks, Sam.
Love the new look.
Yes, we've just been handed Sam's new business cards from Inspired
Very
Funeral
smart.
Planning. It is. It is.
Well, it's something a little bit different.
Mm, I like it. I like
Thank
it
you.
A lot.
Thank you.
So everything that you hear today is from Inspired Funeral Planning. Easy enough to remember. Not that I'm doing a commercial for you, but...
Thanks, Brody. You've got that lovely voice.
Inspired. I-N-S-P-I-R-E-D. That's I-N.
Oh, Brody.
I get into trouble for that.
You will. You will.
Cash for comment. Okay, so, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
And I apologise heartily because we're going to be covering off stuff that we've already covered off because I lost it. I didn't lose it. I didn't get cross. I just actually physically lost
lost the actual show or recording.
So we're going to get, because it was an important and a very valuable topic. So let's revisit it. We want to start off with the smallest and end up with the largest.
Okay.
All right. These are and indicative costs in between.
All right.
Base level is obviously
Base level is a lawn grave.
Yep.
So that's where the, you know, it's just lawn on top of the
yep.
grave. You can have a plaque flush with the lawn, or you can have some granite. The basic is a lawn grave.
They stipulate, though, don't they? They say you've got to have this.
That's right. Particular. The cemetery will specify the type of memorialisation you can have.
Well, now, interestingly enough, some friends of mine in Mornington, when I made a very quick stone to place, because the head place was there, the plinth was already there, and I just carved one very quickly, and they're still there, and they're actually really neat, because they're only made out of limestone, so they're already well and truly wearing away. But, you know, it's sort of hard now.
Yeah, well, Mornington Cemetery's, you know, it's they're obviously a small country cemetery, so you either have a choice of a monumental lawn grave, so you can have a headstone with lawn, or you can have a plaque with lawn. They're the two options.
Who looks after the lawn?
So the cemetery maintain the grass for you.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
They'll go around and mow it.
Right, right. Yeah. So they'll maintain it for you.
And that's part of the fees, because once someone's buried in a grave, the grave is there forever. That's the legislation in Victoria.
Right.
It's not necessarily the case in other states, and certainly not overseas. Well, they
can be moved.
Yes, you'll have a tenure on a grave.
Forever.
Oh. No, in other states, and particularly overseas, when you think, you know, say Italy, they don't have a lot of land.
Yeah.
No. You'll have a tenure on a grave, and after, say, 50 years, the bones will be removed and the grave will be resold.
And where do the bones go?
They're normally put in what, like a small container and put somewhere else in the cemetery.
Right.
And then if you had a monument or something, does that...
That gets dismantled.
Oh, it goes totally.
But in Victoria here, legislation is that once someone is buried in a grave...
That's it.
It's there forever.
What about fees?
So there's no ongoing fees.
No ongoing fees, right.
No. Okay. So, you know, a lawn grave, let's say, you know, at Mornington, that's a different, as I said, it's a small country cemetery.
Yep.
It's about 2,800.
Right.
You cannot prepay at Mornington, though, because otherwise it'd be full.
Yep.
Because Mornington, you know, peninsula people want to be buried here. So you can't prepay at all. Let's say you go to somewhere like Springvale Botanical Cemetery. Everyone knows that it's the largest. You can prepay, but a basic lawn grave is about $4,500.
Right.
So that's their base model.
How high can you stack them, so to speak?
So you can have up to 3 burials. So 9 foot.
On top of each other.
Yeah.
Okay. 9 foot, 7 foot, 5 foot. And you specify that at the time of the first burial.
Right. Okay. And So would I buy the plot for 3?
Well, you buy the plot.
Yes.
You can prepay the interments as well. So the 4.5 will be the grave. Then you've got the interment fees well.
You're right.
So you've got the 9-foot digging fee, the 7-foot digging fee, and the 5-foot digging fee.
Right.
So you can prepay all of those, which then fixes the cost.
Right. But when I purchase the thing in the first place, I say I want to go down to the bottom. Thanks.
Yeah, I want to go to 9 feet.
And whether the other, you know, mum and dad want to be on top of me or whatever, then that's up to them.
That's up to them.
But they can be. Okay. Right.
So you can have up to 3 bodily remains in a grave.
Right.
Yep. You can have, and this is, I'm speaking from experience at Springvale Cemetery, you can have as many sets of cremated remains as you like in a grave. They'll just limit the number of plaques you can have to commemorate those people.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they dig a little pocket.
Are they buried in a pot in the soil or just scattered?
No. Buried in a pocket.
In a pocket. Right. Yeah. Okay. Right. So that's the base level entry.
That's the basic.
Base level entry.
Yeah.
Other than scattering cremated remains.
Well, that's right.
But that's that's nothing.
Yeah.
So then we move up to still a below ground, but we're not lawn covered. We're now covered in something else.
That's right. So you have the option of having what they call a vault, which is a concrete lined grave. This is very popular with the Italian Catholic community before mausoleums were built, which are above ground interments. Mm-hmm. So the vault, you could have only 2 people in a vault. It's concrete lined after the first person's buried. It's filled with sand and then a concrete slab placed on top. and then the next person. And there's generally a quite an elaborate monument on top, and that's a monumental vault. They don't really do vaults anymore because they've got the mausoleums, which is the next level.
And the mausoleum is?
So the mausoleum is a big structure, and you can have single crypts, you can have double crypts, which are side by side,
mm-hmm.
or you can have head-to-head crypts. Now, they're normally six levels high, so it goes A, B, C, D, E, and F. Eye level and heart level are the most expensive, and right. they can be upwards of $60,000 to $70,000.
A slot?
Correct.
Wow.
Oh, goodness.
So very, very popular with the Italian Catholic community.
Yep. Right.
So because they can touch.
Oh, okay.
They can touch the outside of the crypt. There's always a photograph of the deceased. There's normally a symbol like the rosary beads or prayers or the Pietà or something like that.
Yes, and you can't see the coffin.
No, they can't see it, but they can touch the outside of the crypt. That's right. Why the heart and eye level are so expensive, because they can. Obviously, when someone's six levels up,
yeah.
they it's can't touch the difficult. Crypt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get a ladder. No.
OHS, they don't
no.
they don't allow a ladder anymore.
No. So that's the creme de la creme, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, right.
No, oh, there's more.
But wait, there's more. At Springvale Botanical Cemetery, they had what they called family crypts. So it was in a private section in the mausoleum where you had a room which had 10 crypts, and you got your own key, you got a stained glass window, you got music piping through, you could do whatever you liked to that room. And for 10 family members, and that was about $400,000.
Wow.
Early burly.
They had six of those.
And they were all sold. Like, really?
Yeah, but wait, there's still more.
Oh, there's more. No. There's more.
There is. So that was about $400,000.
Right.
They also have a massive feng shui area in the Song He Wan area at Springvale Botanical Cemetery. And they have family graves that allow up to 12 burials just for the land alone. Nothing else, no foundations, no nothing, is about $290,000.
Wow.
So on top of that, you've got to pay for the monument to go on top.
Right. And that's for 12 people.
12 people.
You wouldn't see any change out of $500,000.
Correct. Gosh. And one family I looked after, they bought two on the one day.
Unbelievable.
So
it's a real celebration of the life that has passed.
And it's their belief
in their
too.
Culture.
That's right.
Yes.
So the family graves, because they, you know, traditionally the Chinese would like to be up the top.
Oh,
so
okay.
So they're always at the top of the hill. So the family graves are at the top of the hill.
Right.
They're the most expensive, and they go all the way down to the
ones. We've only got 1 minute to go. So the reason I think that what Sam is talking about is so important is that clearly the whole business about funerals and funeral management and what choices you are better to make now in advance.
Absolutely.
Than they are when you're under the stress of
the
death in the family.
That's right. And that's where having a conversation about what your options mm-hmm. are is so vitally important to do that.
And pre-planning.
Pre-planning, having a conversation, you can prepay so much,
mm-hmm.
and it just eases the burden for you.
So move over to Tupperware party. There's now going to be funeral planning parties.
Well, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Why not? I think it's a perfectly good thing to do.
It's a great thing to do with the family, really, so everyone is aware as well.
Need to talk about it. Absolutely need to talk about it.
And it's much better to have it in the comfort and the gentleness of, you know, over dinner or, you know, after, you know, at a party, literally.
Exactly.
And then say, well, you know, this is, you can never look at this and this and this and this, and or you might, you know, that the whole family needs to talk about this or whatever else. I think it's very, very, very important. My dear, we actually have to go. We can
find you,
I believe, at inspiredfuneralplanning.com.au. Is
Correct.
That up and running yet?
It'll be by the middle of next week. Yeah. The website will be live.
But can you write to info at?
You can write to info okay. at.
So info at inspiredfuneralplanning.com.au, and you'll find Sam, and she will be able to give you all the lowdown on that. With that, I'm afraid, darling, we have to bid our farewell, don't we? I'm going to play this piece of music because it has to be played. Here we go. And then we have to say goodbye because we're literally coming up to say farewell.
Oh, farewell, Brody.
Nice to see you. Well, I'm sorry. Look at the clock.
I know. Oh, I am.
Bye.
Bye.